All right, Liz Powers, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dustin. I'm happy to be here.
So, I'm not going to give the normal introduction. I want you to introduce yourself. So, Liz, could you please say a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do?
I'm the co-founder and CEO of Art Lifting. I started Art Lifting 11 years ago, and we champion artists with disabilities by selling their work to corporations. So we work with 500 corporations now and have sold tens of millions worth of artwork, with the majority of the profit going right back to our artists.
When I first heard about what you were doing, it really resonated with me because it seems like you're a person who found a way to make a positive impact through the things that you like and the things that are important to you. Could you talk about the genesis of art lifting? Like how did this idea come to be and how did you get started?
It's been a journey that started in 2006, so almost 20 years ago. But initially, so I was a college student from 2006 to 2010, and I did volunteer social work during that time. So helping individuals get housing, jobs, access to food banks. And I learned a lot during those 4 years. One thing that I learned was my clients desperately wanted a job, but it was during the last recession, and a lot of people had a lot of trouble finding a job. Some clients I literally applied to 100 jobs with, and they were quote unquote lucky when they got a rejection, because at least that was a response. So after hearing repeatedly, "Liz, I want an opportunity, not a handout," yet having all these bang my head against the wall moments where we're applying to job 100 and it's still not working out, I thought, how can I help expand the definition of a job in order to include more people in the economy? Didn't know how to do that, but just had that question in the back of my head for years, and switched careers to be a full-time art therapist in two homeless shelters in the Boston area. And that's when everything clicked, because I saw really saleable work that would literally get stuffed in the two closets of the shelters where I worked, and realized that there are about 1,000 existing art groups, either in disability centers or shelters in the US. So that meant there were 1,000 closets full of art. Of course, not all of that art is saleable, but I thought, why don't I just create a marketplace, curate the top work, and sell and rent it to help people earn much needed money, but also build confidence and know that they're being defined by their talents rather than their circumstance.
When you mentioned that you started this when you were in college, or at least like you started working in social work, what type of social work and what was the population that you were originally working with?
I was working with a nonprofit called LIFT, and LIFT trains student volunteers to it, really, you're doing anything. You're trying to be a complement. I was in the Cambridge, Massachusetts Health and Human Services Center. So the full-time career social workers are all there, but they have strict guidelines sometimes of, they can only work on Section 8 housing, let's say. But if their client also needs access to a food bank or needs their taxes done for free, or could be a whole range of things, needs help applying to jobs, updating their resume, we would help fill in those gaps. So I'd work with about 5 clients per week for an hour each. And I just, from those amazing people, I learned, both the social workers and my clients, I learned a lot over those 4 years, and could see many gaps in both the system, meaning, the economy of all these people want to work but can't find jobs, but also gaps in benefits that are provided.
And so I know I may be kind of working backwards here, but we'll circle this all together. Did you want to go into social work? How did you look at going to college? Like, did you know what you wanted to do? And it was like around giving back or being helpful. Like, how did that come to be?
I mean, I was 18, so I definitely didn't know what I wanted to do. I was going to Harvard College, and Harvard Square has a huge homeless population. So that's just how I started volunteering. Originally, I was flipping pancakes in the morning shift at the local homeless shelter for the first year, but then I realized it wasn't the best fit for my personality because I really like to get to know people and see if I can help in other ways. So that's why I shifted to do the volunteer social work.
Did you grow up, was your family or your inner circle into volunteering or giving back in the community? Like, where did the spirit of I want to do positive things and make a positive impact come from, in your opinion?
That's a good question. My family's super generous, so I'm sure it came from them. I'm really close to my parents and my grandmother, and they're always trying to support other people. Guessing that's where it was instilled. To be totally honest, like in high school, I didn't volunteer. I was a three-sport varsity athlete, so I was like kind of on the go all the time. So it was nice to make time to give back to the community once I was in college.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so when you go to college, you just have, were you still playing sports when you went to college or just had free time?
Yeah, I was a varsity sailor. So that actually was a 40-hour per week commitment. So I still had, you know, quite a big commitment for sports. But in college, you have so much less time in classes compared to high school. So I did have free time to be able to volunteer.
Yeah, a little bit of bandwidth there. So, okay, so flash forward, you start seeing this need and all of these different artist skills, and you're like, there's a place for this. Let's go back to that evolution of art lifting and where you really started to gain traction, because you mentioned like, oh yeah, I see a way, and like most entrepreneurs or people that start something, you're like, how hard could it be? And then you find out, like, yeah, it's pretty hard. So I'd love to hear the next steps on your journey.
Yeah. So when I was running to art groups and shelters, it felt like the most obvious thing to start was an annual art show. So the artists who I worked with were able to sell their work, but also we could collaborate with other art therapists and art programs in the Boston area. I was 22 at the time, so I was very aware of how naive I was. It's my first time running art therapy groups. So when I was starting out, I just ran around Boston cold emailing anyone who would respond to me who were already art therapists to get their advice of over their 30-year career. What have they learned? What do they recommend I do? But in that process, I built these relationships with amazing people who also happened to have 30 people in their art program in the shelter where they worked who had saleable art. So I, 6 months into my job, I thought, why don't I just help bring us all together? So it was 8 different art groups in local shelters in Boston. I started the first annual art show called City Heart. That was in, I guess it was 2011. So that brought together 8 art groups, about 80 artists, and we got donors to donate the space, but also enough money for renting tables and tablecloths and all those details. And we had 100% of the proceeds go to the artists. That annual show built over the years, and eventually Boston Properties donated this beautiful hallway in this main mall in Boston in the Prudential Center. So we're no longer in a church basement where it was only people who knew to go were there. all of a sudden there were people who were shopping at Barnes and Noble who just happened upon the show. And that's when I was super motivated, because strangers would say, oh my gosh, this is amazing. When's the next show? And it was really depressing to say it's in 364 days.
Mm.
So that's when the idea for Art Lifting came about, was why don't we, rather than have an art show one day a year with only original art and only artists in Boston, why don't we create a marketplace that represents artists every day of the year beyond just Boston? And rather than just selling original work, why don't we help artists make unending money from each piece by selling prints, but also by licensing their work so it can be printed on mugs or cell phone cases or any other product.
That's amazing. And so I want to put a pin in that too, because about the, like, how the business side of things and how that evolved, and oh, maybe we can do this and do that. But let's talk about the art therapy side for a second. Could you tell our listeners just about what art therapy is and how it works and the science behind the art?
Yeah, so art therapy is something that most people have never heard of, so I'm really glad you asked that. It can mean many different things. The high level is a way to process emotion or overcome trauma through art. That is super broad. It can mean one-on-one sessions where someone's painting and an art therapist is using the painting as a way to start conversation of, you're using the color red a lot, or what does that image look like? Is it a family? Is it a house? That's not what I did. I did group art therapy. I was working with mostly victims of domestic violence. So it took a long time to build trust. So for my groups, I just throw art supplies on the table, and there might be six of us in the group that day, and we might spend most of the time quietly creating work. And it could be over a week or several months. We could earn trust with each other and open up about experiences. But art therapy can also mean using music or dance or all different forms of expression to help process emotions.
Yeah, you know, one of the things when you talk about all the different forms of art and expression, I always feel like they you need an outlet for something, whether it's music, whether it's painting, drawing, sports, activity. Like there needs to be some type of creative outlet, and being able to be aware of that and share it. But you've made an amazing impact and a business out of it. You know, that's impacting so many people's lives that can find that. So on the business side, going to that. When you say we're gonna do this and we're gonna start printing on these things, who helped you along the way, or was there a certain organization or person that helped you really grow that side of Art Lifting?
So my brother and I started Art Lifting together back 11 years ago. There are many people who helped us along the way. First of all, we started Art Lifting out of the Harvard Innovation Lab. That was an amazing resource. So it was this free space where we could go and sit alongside other entrepreneurs and work on our ventures and at the water cooler say, like, oh my gosh, I need to set up payroll for the first time. Are there companies you use? Like, what do you recommend? All of those nitty gritty, non-exciting questions. It was so helpful to get to ask friends that we were working side by side with. Harvard Innovation Lab also had 400 mentors that we had access to, so we could schedule time blocks with them. And that was incredible because they were from really diverse backgrounds. So in the early days when we weren't sure if we'd be B2C or B2B, you know, we could talk to people in both fields. And we're really lucky. In Boston, there's also Mass Challenge, another startup accelerator that we were accepted into in our second year. And then another startup accelerator called Thai Scale Up that helps companies go from seed to Series A stage. So we just happen to live in Boston in this environment where there's all these resources around us to help us grow.
Well, that's amazing. And you took advantage of it and did very well from it. So you mentioned having access to 400 different mentors. That's amazing. How many people would you say were in the innovation lab, you know, that were, you know, your peers?
Great question. It was 11 years ago, so I don't know.
I'm not going to fact check you. Check you on the numbers
maybe,
here.
Yeah, a couple hundred other entrepreneurs. Okay. You know, people come and go and have class, but
sure,
probably cumulatively.
No, that's amazing. And so when you said like you're trying to decide like is it B2B, B2C, like all those things. When you have your business plan or you're starting to craft that, can you walk me through like how you made those decisions or what those specific decisions were that you made?
Sure. So initially we were just B2C. So we started with four artists in Boston. Our business model has been the same since day one of the artists earn 55% of the profit from each sale. 44% goes to cover art lifting expenses, and then 1% goes to our art supply fund. We're really proud that that business model has worked out. Something that I had learned from the few years before that of running the annual art show where 100% of the proceeds went to the artists was it's really not sustainable. You know, I lay in bed thinking, oh my gosh, what if our donors stop donating? Then overnight, we're in trouble and the art show might die if we're not able to get other new donors. So for my background in nonprofits, I was really intentional about creating the business model to be sustainable. And we're a for-profit, for-purpose company. What's called a public benefit corporation. So it's been amazing to not need donations at all. We've been able to scale to our artists earning over $10 million just from this simple business model. In terms of the more of the nitty-gritty of B2C versus B2B, so initially we had four artists in Boston and we just had a really simple Shopify website. We'd write to reporters because we couldn't afford marketing. My brother and I just started the business with $4,000 of our savings. So we were extremely lean. Reporters would write about us and then that would lead to people coming to the site. Maybe 3 years in, we got a lot of press. We ended up being on a 4-minute segment on the Today Show, and then the next month on the cover of the New York Times business section. So combined, those led to a ton of inbound interest, including companies saying, we want to work with you in our office. And my mom always says, you know, focus on how to work smarter, not harder. As we started working with more and more companies, we realized we can make a much bigger impact on our artists per hour worked if we hyper-focus on B2B rather than B2C. So individuals can still buy from us, but that's not an outbound focus of ours.
No. And that makes total sense. And so, you know, you've been doing this for, you know, say 11 years, you said, is that right?
Yeah.
So I'm sure you've learned a lot over that time and you shared some of the things that you have, but are there any like, call them, you know, macro lessons that you've learned over this time? Things that you're like, you know what, this is the big takeaway that I found. And where in the journey was that?
I think the biggest lesson is, as much as possible, stay disciplined and focused. As an entrepreneur, you're constantly going to have new ideas of your own, but also have people throwing ideas at you at, you know, a party or with one of the 400 mentor conversations. So that's been the through line, is having confidence in, of course, having a level of flexibility, but high level, having confidence in the plan that you created and ensuring that you're giving enough time to execute the plan before waffling back and forth to new ideas. I've seen a lot of companies, you know, I've had a lot of friends who are entrepreneurs, and I think that people giving up too soon is what leads to failure the most often.
Yes. You know, what you said about, like, you know, you're going to get feedback and input from so many different places, and finding a way to, you know, take it in and filter it, but not necessarily jump at every other idea or thing that comes about. It's like, yeah, no, okay, maybe that can be something we consider, but this is, we're still going here.
Yeah. And on that, like, waiting to see trends, like, okay, person A might have one opinion, but did five separate people share that idea, or is it just one outlier? Because I think people tend to be tempted to bend to one individual suggestion, even though you might need more data inputs before bending.
More data inputs, yeah. So now that you've seen the impact that you make, and I feel like you're a very kind person. You're very, I know that you're a very empathetic person. So I don't want to say, like, oh yeah, I did this and that. You're probably not going to say those things. However, you're making a big impact in a lot of people's lives. And is there, you know, a certain, what do you think has been the biggest impact that you have made and continue to make?
Every month we pay our artists on the 15th, and we have an automatic form that they can fill out, where if they want to share, they can share, like, how that payment from that month is impacting them. By far, the biggest impact we've made is on our artists, of creating jobs, creating hope. Artists have said it gives them reason to get out of bed in the morning. Multiple artists have said that the money that they've earned through art lifting has led to them going from homelessness to housing. So it's just incredible to hear the individual artist stories. But also, we've sold tens of thousands of artworks. Bank of America alone has purchased 14,000 artworks.
Wow.
So to think about all of the domino effect impacts of people seeing the art and reading the artist's story next to the art, of, you know, maybe someone was having a bad day and then they read that and that, you know, gave them some oomph to go after plan B or plan C. So I'm really proud that we're helping change stereotypes about the disability community and help create just a more inclusive world.
That is, well, not just that, but what you and your brother, and I know it's a community effort, so there's a lot of different people involved. Not only are you doing something that's incredibly impactful for those lives, but you mentioned the domino effect and what that means to other people. And that's why I'm so happy and appreciative for you sharing this time today to share this, because, you know, there is a way to do good and do well, you know, to do something that you enjoy doing that helps other people, that lifts other people, and, you know, is a benefit to society. So I just want to say thank you for joining us today, and thank you for everything that you do. I'm going to share your contact information and everything in the show notes. But before we take off, is there anything you want to leave our guests with?
Well, if you'd like to support our mission, we'd love to have you. Our website is artlifting.com, and there's a contact form on there. But we've got a full-time team of 26 people who are happy to help either for individual homes, but our bread and butter is for corporate offices. So for anyone listening, if you happen to have a lot of blank walls in your company's building, or you know of a friend who's doing a renovation, we'd really appreciate if you spread the word about our mission.
Well, I'll do everything that I can. And for all those listening that are trying to get people to return to office, you need something on those walls. Art Lifting and Liz Powers, everyone. So Liz, thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dustin.